Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get your requests in. All right. Well, I'd like to welcome back to the show a guy who I admire very much, writes for the Chicago Tribune, and was a regular on my weekend shows for many years, and we love to have him on every once in a while to talk. His name is Steve Johnson. He writes about culture and art and TV and everything. And he was a TV writer and a critic for a long time at the Tribune and a regular on my show on the weekends. You can follow him on Twitter at Stephen K. Johnson. Let's welcome Steve Johnson back to the show. Steve, how are you?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Good. It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, too. So what have you been writing about lately? Do you have a title?
It's sort of culture reporter, which is nice and broad and gives yourself gives me a lot of room to play.
Yeah.
So I cover the museums beat, and I still do a lot of television and weigh in on various column topics from time to time. So it's a nice mix.
That's fun. How long have you been writing for the Trib now?
This is sad and embarrassing, but I literally just got my 30-year watch in February.
That's amazing.
It's a nice watch.
You got a nice 30-year watch.
I gotta say, it better be a nice watch, right?
It better be a nice watch. That's right. Boy, that's great, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was, especially the way things have been going lately. I'm kind of proud to have stuck it out.
Yeah, very, very cool. That's very, very cool. All right, well, let's talk about some of the recent stuff that you've been writing about and get into it. We can cover some of the museum stuff and some of the other things that you've written. But let's start out with the piece that you wrote about the ads on the Oscars better than the Super Bowl. That was your question. Were the television ads on the Oscars better than the Super Bowl? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I've been, for at least a decade now, I've been reviewing the Super Bowl ads kind of in real time as they come up and then writing about them, that night and then the next day doing a kind of analysis piece. And that's the one everybody pays attention to. But I think what's slowly been happening is that the Oscars ads have kind of been catching up in some ways. The knock has or the kind of dismissive quote has always been that the Oscars are the Super Bowl for women, right? Because there's more female viewers compared
right.
to, and it's usually the next highest viewed event of the year, but way lower. But I think there's a real nice kind of quality surge going on there, and maybe the ads are a little more. Like the Super Bowl ads, my sense, at least this year, is the Super Bowl ads were going more for the gut, and the Oscar ads were maybe going a little more for the head and the heart. I came away pretty impressed. I paid attention to them in a kind of specific way for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And let's recap some of the Super Bowl commercials that you thought were pretty good. On the whole, I thought they were a little weak this year, the Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah, I think people always come away thinking of that because the hype is so extreme, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
If you're not completely blown away, like you've probably already seen the best ones way ahead of the show and then, not that much during the show. Like there's too much kind of just going for crass humor, just getting a safe punchline kind of thing. And not that much is super memorable. Like, I don't know, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago where the M&M statement about Detroit and American resiliency
right.
came out for Chrysler.
Right.
There hasn't been quite that memorable thing since then. But, I thought the Honda ad this year with the talking yearbook character.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. That was
superb.
Definitely one of my favorites.
That's a really superb little piece of filmmaking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
the cell phone ad with the guy pushing his car off his cliff,
right,
off the cliff to
right.
To get out of his Verizon contract.
Right.
That was Sprint. Yeah, it was for Sprint.
It was for Sprint, but and it's got the guy with the glasses. Can you hear me now, guy?
Right, right. And the really bad dummy in the car of the guy, like, this is going to be the bot. Yeah. Well, kids, daddy's dead. I mean, that's a great ad.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I would agree with you, though, that I thought the ads for the Oscars were smarter and I think a little bit better. How did you feel about the Target ads where they had the filmmakers make the movies, the short films, based on the receipt?
Oh, the Walmart ad.
Yeah, Walmart, sorry, yeah, Walmart.
Yeah, a really big swing and a miss, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of, I don't know about you, but I've taken a lot of kind of creative writing classes through the years, and that is kind of a classic exercise, right? You're given a list of things, and you have to combine them into a short story.
Yeah.
And in this case, they had to combine a list of receipt items into a film. And you know, they tried, so there was one that did sort of a Stranger Things knockoff.
Right.
That was probably the best of them. The worst of them was Seth Rogen's ad where he just did six separate scenarios.
Right.
Like, what, completely not understanding the assignment.
In his defense, he was probably high, Steve.
Right, right, right. Yeah. To him, it seemed brilliant. Yeah, he still loves it.
Yeah.
I
remember my reaction to the Antoine Fuqua ad, which was the first one they ran.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, because I was like, you know, sort of live Facebooking and tweeting a little bit while it was happening, while the Oscars were happening. And I just, like, my response was, well, that was better than the Magnificent Seven.
So, yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
Now, which one's...
It was shorter, anyway.
Yeah, it was, much shorter. So what stands out for you for the Oscars this year, for those commercials and that stood out?
I'm thinking back though. So the 84 lumber ad really bowled on the
immigration.
On the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
On the immigration. Although you had to kind of go to their website to get the end of it.
Right.
GNC, the vitamin supplement company, which we can debate whether that's a worthwhile operation or not, but I think they got to run the ad of theirs that was banned from the Super Bowl, which was kind of interesting, and it was a good ad too.
That Rolex did that commercial.
Rolex was brilliant.
Yeah, it was, and also very bittersweet because Bill Paxton is featured in it.
And Bill, right, right,
and
right.
That was like the day he died, or the day after he died.
Yeah, and I did not. I looked around, and I did not see anything to suggest that was a last minute adjustment. That was just a bit of kind of karma, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? But So that was for listeners who aren't hearing it. That was all the kind of great movie moments that happen to feature Rolex watches, and you've got Paul Newman in there. You know, I mean, you've got all these great stars wearing Rolexes. How can you go wrong with that?
Yeah, that was a very good ad. Very good. Ad.
The New York Times ad was, I thought, pretty brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of black and white text and saying, you know, essentially at this moment in history, truth matters.
Yep.
I'm sort of a partisan there. I think it's kind of nice to have a newspaper company standing up for itself and saying what we do is important and we should advertise and we should trumpet it a little bit.
Right. Right. And the Google ads.
Oh yeah. Based on Lion.
Right. Which was, I mean, well, first of all, that Lion is like an unbelievable commercial for Google Maps.
Yeah. Right.
Google World. Yeah.
Right,
but that was
not that they need it. They're doing okay, even without it.
Yeah, it's true. But the thing about the Google commercials, and I think this is happening to everybody, is that my phone responds to them. Like as I'm watching it, if someone on TV goes, "Hey Google," my phone goes, "I'm sorry, did you say something?" It's sitting on my coffee table when I'm watching TV, suddenly my phone starts to talk to me. Like, I didn't say that. It was on the TV.
Yeah, based on the revelations recently about what the CIA is doing, that may not be so comforting.
Well, what I had heard things, Steve, that in fact, people who have the, you know, like they were showing the commercials where it's like, Google, dim the lights.
Yeah.
And that was happening to people while they were watching TV.
Oh, my God. They would actually, really?
It was happening because it would trigger the device in the house. And so lights would go off and people were like, come on. They're just sitting there watching the TV. But the commercial was triggering the Google device.
You know, that's a little creepy. Yeah, yeah. My brother at Christmas time had one of the Amazon Echoes it was fun, but it was also a little creepy. Then we had it at our New Year's Eve party, it became kind of an object of attention. And I'm like, Echo, open the pod bay doors.
That's where we're going, Steve.
Exactly.
That's where we're going. To wrap this up, do you actually think that the ads for the Oscars are going to get as hyped as the Super Bowl? Is there a possibility that it's going to become like, you know, because the event is usually a couple of weeks after the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's a couple weeks after. And you know, it's a third or so of the viewership. It's 40% or so of the rates.
Yeah.
I think people want shared experiences, and I think there's getting to be, there's kind of less and less opportunity for that on television. So I think if people start to sense that this is another thing we can come together and talk about, it might end up being sort of one long ad conversation instead of the more abbreviated one we've had at the beginning of February for the Super Bowl.
Yeah. All right. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Okay, yeah. Steve, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Yep, Steve Johnson is with us. He is a writer for the Chicago Tribune, writes about all kinds of cultural stuff. And we're going to come back and talk about some of the museum things that he's been writing about. And we got much more here. It's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in 312-981-7200 for that. News is coming up next right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Triple Play Thursday coming up. We will have another edition of Wood Esmeralda Buy That. That's coming up as well. And you can contact us at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also make your Triple Play Thursday requests at 312-981-7200. All right, let's get back to our conversation with Steve Johnson of the Chicago Tribune. Writes about a lot of pop culture stuff and the arts and things like that. And let's welcome Steve back to the show. Welcome back, Steve.
Hey, Nick.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Whistler's mother making a return to Chicago.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, so what do you know of Whistler's mother?
Not much, just that it's a famous painting and I've seen it in pictures.
Right, and it seems kind of staid, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a little, you know, it's like a ivory cameo kind of thing come to life, an icon of motherhood.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to the curator who was part of the team that brought this back to the Art Institute for the first time in 60 years, and she's saying, wait a minute, this is really a pretty exciting painting. This was painted in 1871. It anticipated a lot of aspects of modern art where it's kind of blending the figure into the background so that it's not abstract. It still looks like a real thing, but if you look at it closely, it's almost trying to be more two-dimensional than three-dimensional. I know this is kind of high concept, but if you go, I mean, really, just go and look at this thing. This is one of the great American painting masterpieces of the world.
Right.
It hasn't been here in 60 years. It's this huge canvas. It's 5 feet by 5 feet.
See,
it's
now that's really the thing. When in reading your piece, Steve, that's the thing that I was most surprised by, the actual size of the canvas.
Yeah, it's a whopper, right? It's a monumental presence in front of you, and if you kind of read what she has to say about it in the article, you sit there in front of it, and you're like, oh yeah, this thing really, like, you take that mother figure out of it, and in some ways it looks like 1950s American abstract paintings, and this guy was anticipating that in 1871, which is, you know, pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And where has the Whistler's mother been? It's been
So it's owned by France. It was bought by the kind of French museum system in 1891, and so it's been mostly at the Louvre and the Musée d'Orsay since then. But they arranged to get it here. This is kind of an interesting story, too. This is a backstory of how museums work. So the Art Institute was loaning out Grant Wood's American Gothic, another great iconic painting, for a show that's traveling over there. And they said, hey, what can we get in return, essentially? And so they arranged for this kind of essentially swap of great masterpieces.
Wow.
So it's fun. So, you know, at a minimum, take a date. You seem like an erudite, cultured kind of person, and you can sit there and talk about motherhood.
All right. And how long is it going to be at the Art Institute, did they say?
It's up for a few months. I forget the exact closing date, but it'll be there a while, but those things always sneak up on you, so get there sooner rather than later. Thursday nights, they stay open late, so that's a good time to go.
Good night
And the crowds are less, too.
All right, great. And it's at the Art Institute, Whistler's Miller. Classic. All right, let's talk a little bit more about some museum stuff that you wrote about. Field Museum has a meteorites display?
Yeah, they have a small little meteorites display. They just redid and brought it up to speed. That's kind of a cool thing about museums. They are... You know, I think we tend to take them for granted because they're here and they're always there, and you've been once and you feel like you've seen it all. But I to me, it's been some people think it's kind of this sleepy little beat in the culture world, but I think they do really exciting, great stuff, and you really we have some of the best places in the world right here in our backyard, easily accessible, free a lot of days, especially if you're an Illinois resident. So the meteorite thing is just, you know, it's a nice little update of one area where they put a new exhibit in that explains what meteorites are, how they work, what the great stuff they have in their collection. There are also meteorites in this new big exhibition they're doing called Specimens that opens Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, you're right. You've written a piece about that's going to be posted later today, correct?
Yeah, they'll be in the paper.
In the paper this morning, yeah.
In Thursday's paper, exactly. Yep. And this is really cool. So there are like some 30 million specimens at the field, plants and insects and animals and dinosaurs. They store them all. They're there as a kind of permanent record for science to explore and share and everything. And so they've culled kind of the most interesting objects from that, about 5,000 of them, and put them into this big exhibit that kind of shows what goes on backstage. So it's kind of a way of seeing what happens behind the scenes. And it's just really fascinating. I thoroughly enjoyed seeing it. I want to get back there and spend more time with it. I thoroughly enjoyed writing about it. I just a fantastic new show. I love that kind of backstage stuff they do.
Yeah, you can see. So that's an exhibition called Specimens. And
Specimens.
Is it out now? Is it open now?
It opening Thursday. So
it opens this morning.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
It opens today. So yeah. And you're writing about it, and it'll be in the Trib this morning. So make sure
exactly.
You check that out. And then the meteorite display, the little meteorite display at the Field Museum as well. You want to stop there too. That's up and running.
Yeah, that's up. That's full time back in the back corner, second floor by the whole gems and rocks area.
All right, got it. And the Adler Planetarium. Has had some improvement in their theater, in their domed theater?
Yeah, they in 2011, they completely redid their domed theater.
We talked about it on the show.
Right.
Yeah.
And great. I don't know if you've seen a show there yet, but it's been pretty breathtaking.
Yeah.
But, of course, TV technology improves. So what was state-of-the-art and, you know, claimed to be best in the world 6 years ago needs improvement, so they brought in a new array of projectors and cameras, and you know, I haven't had a chance to get over there and see it yet, but I'm looking forward to that. It sounds like it'll be, you know, bigger and better still, and I'm still hoping, I still keep leaning on them. It's, you know, you got to bring back the Pink Floyd laser light show.
you've been talking about that for 6 years now, Steve.
I need that. Yeah, exactly. It's a part of my heritage.
So the Adler Planetarium, always a great place to go. And they did, I mean, I have been there in the last 6 years, and they've done a great job. And to make improvements on that, it should be pretty breathtaking when it opens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's open now. Those
it's open now.
Are there and running, yeah. Yep.
Okay, all right. And how about Operation Finale at the Holocaust Museum?
Yeah, so Holocaust Museum is a really great little museum up in Skokie. You know, it's probably a hard sell, like, hey, we got a nice Saturday afternoon, honey. Let's go to the Holocaust Museum,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they do what they do really well. The main historical exhibit is breathtaking. It's not some small regional museum. It's just really superbly done, start to back. It you know, can hold its own with any national museum anywhere. And
it's in Skokie. Whereabouts in Skokie?
It's almost directly opposite the Edens from Old Orchard.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just on the other side there.
Sure, right there. Okay.
So same exit, but you just go west instead of east.
Okay.
And they have a great new exhibit about the trial, the capture and trial of Adolf Eichmann, the Nazi war criminal who was captured in Argentina in 1960. And it uses a lot of artifacts that the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, held on to from that operation. It's basically a James Bond spy operation kind of brought to life in a little museum setting. And I really enjoy it. It's a story, you know, start to back. It's a story of how this thing happened. How important it was to the world and people in general, and just riveting.
And that's Operation Finale at the Holocaust Museum in Skokie. And
true.
There's a new Americans Writer Museum with an opening date at May 16th.
Yeah, on Michigan Avenue, people have got together and they're opening the first museum in America that is going to celebrate the American writer. You know, there are a lot of like. There's the home of Jack London. There's the home of maybe Jack Kerouac. I mean, like every writer here and there has their own home museum, but this one will celebrate American writers generally, and it's going to be in Chicago. And it sounds like they have a pretty good plan for pulling it off and bringing it together and making it coherent. There'll be a section devoted to Chicago writers in specific. There'll be rotating exhibits. One of the first exhibits they'll have will be the Jack Kerouac scroll on which On the Road, the original manuscript, is written.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty special to those of us who at one point in our lives connected with that novel. Just a great little spot, second floor of a vintage building at Michigan and Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
And, that opens in mid-May and should be a cool little visit.
All right, cool. Steve, hang on, okay?
All right.
Because we can't let you go without talking about TV. We have to do that. Okay, hang on a second. Steve Johnson is with us. He writes for the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at Stephen K. Johnson. All right, and we'll talk more. We got some TV to talk with Stephen about. Steve, right after this on 720 WGN. All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. And it's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in, one song, three artists. Get them in now, 312-981-7200. Lots of stuff to talk about. We're going to play a little Wood Esmeralda by that later on in the show. Right now, we're talking with Steve Johnson of the Chicago Tribune, who writes about culture and all kinds of cool stuff, and was once the TV critic at the Chicago Tribune. How long did you write about TV, Steve?
So I officially did that job for about a decade, beginning in 1995.
Okay. And you still, you know, every once in a while you write about TV.
Right, when there's something big and interesting, or when there's something about Chicago, or, you know.
Well,
editor tells me to do something.
Right. Well, one of the recent pieces that you wrote is about how Colbert has really gained a new confidence and his ratings are up and he's doing some really great work. Tell us a little bit about the piece you wrote there.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of following a lot of the late night comedy in the Trump era, because I think it's been really interesting to see how people respond. You know, a lot of people say, how can you really satirize Donald Trump when he kind of does it himself in right. a lot of situations? Mm-hmm. But it's been really, I think, rewarding for those of us who were fans of Colbert on the Colbert Report to see him kind of finding his stride on the late night network show, CBS's The Late Show,
right.
With Donald Trump as kind of his foil. Like, Colbert, I think, has taken it really personally. I think that Trump won and is almost... it's almost like he's on a mission to make everybody else see what he sees as the flaws in this guy. Mm-hmm. And his ratings are up. He's beating Fallon for the first time since, you know, the very first days of his show when people were first checking him out. And I think he's been doing some really strong, pointed comedy. And I think it's working because people sense that it's not like an opportunism thing for him. It's like this is a genuine belief and passion for him that he thinks this is a bad thing going on, and he's going to, you know, use his show and use comedy to try to help people see that.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I was in the minority on this. I was never a huge fan of Colbert Report. And I know that it's you know, sacrilegious to say that, especially right. a person who loves comedy. But I just think, you know, the shtick wore off on me. I mean, I couldn't get past it. And now I like the guy because he's him. He's like a real dude. He's not this, you know, satire, you know, satirical character.
Right.
He's being himself, and I like that. And, you know, because I used to like him when he was on the stage at Second City here.
Yeah, well, he's a brilliant performer, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I much prefer the real guy to the character he did on The Daily Show and on his own show.
That's interesting to hear. And I think in some ways the Trump thing has helped him find his real voice too, because I think for a while, you know, you get a big network show and you're listening to a lot of people, and you're, you know, the kind of metaphor I thought for it is they crammed him into these kind of skinny, short, young guy suits early on.
Yeah, and you know what, Steve, I love that you pointed that out in your piece, that he's now dressing like a 50-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Like, be the guy you are and be confident in it, and I think he's found that.
Yeah. Now, in general, how do you feel about the late night, how the other late night shows are handling the Trump administration? I personally think that Seth Meyers is doing really great work.
Seth Meyers is the other guy, I think, who has really risen. You know, he's super smart. He's super pointed in his comedy. And Colbert and him are the two I go out of my way to watch all the time. And Samantha Bee also.
Yep, Samantha Bee is great.
Who is just crackling with anger and energy and fire in her response.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people go after Trevor Noah, mm-hmm. a little bit much, but I like the guy.
I agree. I like him better than I like his show. Like, I keep wanting to like his show more. I'm not sure. Like comedy or that kind of show is his ultimate voice, but I saw him doing a talk in Chicago based on his autobiography.
Yeah, his book. Sure, yeah.
And fascinating guy, thoughtful guy, really smart, really. You know, you got a really nice feeling about him, and you're kind of rooting for him to succeed. And you know, and I do want that show to be better, but I feel like it's just a notch below what the others are doing.
I like him though; I really do. I think
I
root for the guy. You know, those are big shoes to fill.
Wholeheartedly, it's an impossible situation.
Yeah,
to walk in.
Yeah. What else in general are you watching SNL?
I keep watching SNL. They're pretty good these days.
Yeah, it was a terrible show last week. The last episode with Octavia Spencer, I thought was pretty bad.
Yeah,
two or three good sketches and a great cold open.
Right.
You know, but that was about it. But they, I think.
There was a good, what was the ad on that show? That was very good.
For the, it was for the Republican movie. That the Republicans who would stand, who wouldn't, somebody who would stand up.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which was very funny.
Yeah,
that was great. And the sessions, the cold open, the Forrest Gump thing was just great.
Brilliant.
Kate McKinnon is a national treasure, for God's sake. So I think in general, SNL is having, obviously their ratings are up and they're having a really strong year, you know, bringing Alec Baldwin in and just the stroke of genius of having Melissa McCarthy come in.
Yeah, spicy.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, just really a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah. And to their credit, it's not Baldwin every week now, right? They're going to hold it back and make it special, hopefully.
Yeah. He wasn't on this week. So, you know, now let me ask you this in general, what are you watching on TV that you're enjoying, Steve?
You know, I'm trying to get through The Man in the High Castle. It's been a slog, but I'm really excited about Americans starting up again.
Yeah, great show.
Have you watched the? It just started on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I have not watched. It's on the DVR.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, I'm waiting. But boy, I think that's going to seem a little extra relevant now that Russians are part of our lives again.
Steve, it was great. It was great catching up with you, man. And
you too.
We have to do it a little more often, okay?
Let's talk after Catastrophe comes back.
There you go.
Another great one.
Okay, we will. Definitely, for sure. And again, later this morning in the paper, this morning's paper, you can see the article that you wrote about specimens at the Field Museum. And you can check out Steve at the Tribune website and at Stephen K. Johnson on Twitter. Steve,
thanks.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Later.
All right, there you go. Steve Johnson, everybody. And he's great, and we'll have him back on, you know, pretty soon. Okay, we got to take a break here. We got the news coming up right here on 720 WGN.